Hey, hey, Heat Nation! Welcome back to Heat is Gonna Heat. I'm your host, Kyle Russell, here as usual to chat a little about our favorite NBA team, the Miami Heat. Not too much to go through this week. Got one game to recap, a quick win over the Pelicans. The Heat currently in the middle of a four-game road trip to start their post-All-Star break. Thank you for the scheduling for that. But after the one-game recap, bit of an interesting game. There was a fight that went on. I don't know if y'all heard about that. But after that, look ahead to see what we can kind of expect from the Miami Heat players and the team as we go on the stretch run towards the playoffs. And then, as usual, we'll finish up looking ahead to the next week of Miami Heat basketball. It'll be a bit of a busy one. So, first, let's go back to last Friday, only a few days ago. The Miami Heat returning from the post-All-Star break and immediately going right on the road, starting a four-game West road trip. First in New Orleans. At least they didn't have to go too far west. I think they're only one time zone over, if even anything at all. But, yeah, no, at least one time zone over. But Heat won that game 106-95. This would be a game where they would get Jimmy Butler back, who previous to the All-Star break had been out for the whole week due to a death in the family. Jimmy came back, looked energized, looked refreshed, looked a little angry, too, as we'll talk about a little bit later on. But Josh Richardson and Terry Rozier would continue to be out with the knee injury to the Rozier that happened in the Celtics game and the shoulder injury that also happened in that same game to Richardson. And despite the signing of DeLon Wright over the weekend, I think it was the previous Sunday, yeah, because I covered that on the last episode. So despite that, DeLon Wright would not get any play time just yet, but talk a little bit about that as well later on. So to recap the game itself now. Since Josh Richardson and Rozier still out, the Heat went with a starting lineup of Bam Adebayo, Nikola Jovic, who has been in since Rozier went out. I think the idea there is, with Rozier out, you lean more into having Jovic out there because one of his skills that he has right now is playmaking. So essentially, he can do a little bit of like point forward since the Heat don't have a traditional point guard without Rozier. So, Bam, Jovic, Caleb, Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero. The other ones, those have all been starters for the Heat for a while, so that makes a lot of sense. For the game itself now, Heat offense got out to a fantastic start. They built up a 20-8 lead early on, though a 7-0 run by the Pelicans would help trim that lead down to single digits, Heat still being up 7 after the first quarter. Miami then opened up the second quarter with a 12-0 run to be up 19. The lead would waver around there for about a minute or so, and then the Heat's offense just completely died as they give up a 21-3 close that would see them tied with the Pelicans, again, when they were up 19 about halfway through the second quarter. So a bit of an embarrassing end to the second. But that's why we play two halves of the game, right? So first few minutes of the third quarter were back and forth. The Heat did take a lead on a 9-0 run, and though they did get trimmed down a little bit, we're still up 4 going into the fourth, moving in the right direction. And then the beginning of the fourth is where we had the aforementioned fight. So a little bit of context leading up into this. This game was really, really chippy and rough and physical and big runs for both sides. So like the atmosphere and the intensity was definitely ratcheted up. Even the commentators were talking about, though, this kind of has playoff vibe level to it. And then at the start of the fourth quarter, a Kevin Love wrap-up foul on Zion Williamson initiated the fight. So if you watch enough NBA games, you've probably seen situations where one player, Kevin Love, just wraps up another, like Zion Williamson, just to keep them from going up and getting an easy dunk or a layup. And that's all Kevin Love was doing. Like, hey, let me wrap up the arms, let me hold you down, and then eventually kind of just like guide you down to the ground and make sure everybody's kind of fine. The problem, though, is when Zion hit the ground, he had... the initial impression I got, even just from a neutral observer, was like, oh, Zion looks like he's injured. Like, he's making a face or body language, however you want to interpret it, like he's injured. Which, I guess, is what his teammates then saw as well, leading to them coming up and confronting Kevin Love and the Heat teammates. The funny part of that is twofold. One, which is like, after a few seconds, Zion just like slammed his fist on the ground. And it was very clearly that he wasn't like... mad because he was injured. He was more so mad because he was frustrated because, like I mentioned, it had been a really tough, chippy, physical night, and he had not been shooting well because the Heat had been playing great defense against him. So, Zion was fine, and the other part of this is, even afterwards, Zion, the quote, and you can go find this online, he said, hey, if anything, I had no beef with Kevin Love. He protected me on the fall down. So very clearly, there was no ill intent. nor was there even any perceived by Zion. But in that moment, and again, with like the emotions running high from a really physical game, the Pelicans player, I think it was Najee Marshall, started confronting Jimmy Butler and the rest. Jimmy Butler goes to push him on the chest. It slides up, hit Najee Marshall in the neck. Najee Marshall then thinks, oh, it's go time, and grabs Jimmy Butler by the neck. They start fighting. Meanwhile, on the sidelines, Thomas Bryant and Jose Alvarado start getting into it. And then the big sprawl happened, and the end result essentially was Jimmy Butler and Nikola Jovic were kicked out of the game, and then for the Pelican side, Jose Alvarado and Najee Marshall were kicked out of the game. And then we had to come back and then play this fourth quarter with all those emotions running high. So let's go back into that now. So after the fight, the Pelicans did take a brief lead, up one at one point, but the Heat responded by holding them scoreless for the next 6 minutes, going on an 11-0 run of their own to put them up, I think it was 9 at the time. And the Pelicans were just never able to get it, close from there. I think they got to 7 at one point, ultimately losing by 11. Player of the game for this, Bam Adebayo. 24 points, 7 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 3 blocks on 11 of 18 from the field, 2 of 4 from the free throw line. A relatively quiet first three quarters. Like, through the first three quarters, he wasn't, I wouldn't have said he was, like, player of the game or anything like that. It's about what he did in the fourth quarter after Jimmy Butler got ejected. Came alive for, this is just the fourth quarter stat line alone, post Jimmy Butler. 12 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 1 block on 6 of 11 in the fourth. Plus the lockdown defense to keep the Pelicans just turned off their offense. I mean, after the fight, Bam Adebayo was the player of the game and the reason why Miami beat the Pelicans Friday night. Interesting stats for this game. Miami won this one from the three-point line. Miami going 13-29, good for 45%. To the Pelicans, 7-32, good for 22%. I think there was the statistic in like the second quarter was like the Heat were shooting like in the 60s from three-point range, while the Pelicans were in the single digits, and then it equalized a little bit from there. But that was a big reason why they got out to such a huge lead and down the stretch as well. So from the free throw line, from the three-point line, and then also winning from the free throw line. Miami going 17-25, good for 68%. Very bad, especially Jimmy Butler. I think he was 8-12. But still getting more free throw attempts, both made and attempted, than the Pelicans. Pelicans going 10-13, good for 77%. So their percentage is not that much better either. And that was good, though, because the Heat did lose the turnover battle, 14-11, though they did win points off of turnovers, 18-15. So an excellent job, at least, of not letting those turnovers overly penalize them. And then they lost the offensive rebounding battle, 10-18, and losing second-chance points, 11-25. Overall, the Pelicans were plus 22 on field goal attempts, but shot minus 9% from the field. So an instance where Miami was making the best of their opportunities, even if they weren't necessarily shooting that well from the free throw line, but doing enough efficiency-wise to overcome the increase in volume that the Pelicans had. And then honorable mentions for getting done with this game, Jimmy Butler, who was on pace for player of the game in those three quarters, 23 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, 1 block. The 3 steals in particular, good to see him with the defensive effort. That definitely looked like he was more engaged on the defensive end Friday night. But did so on a pretty efficient 7-12 from the field, 1-1 from three-point range, though a little inefficient from the line, 8-12. And doing the Jimmy Butler meme, which has been circulating around a lot, where it's like pretty much up until January you question if this guy even cares about basketball, and then February, March, it's Jim VP, and then April, we see the second coming of Michael Jordan. So, just to shout it out now, Jimmy Butler looking in Jim VP mode. And then the other I will mention, Duncan Robinson, 17 points with a big 5 of 11 from three-point range all off the bench. So, good to see from Duncan being able to just have a great shooting night off the bench, because those seem less consistent than when he starts. So, overall now, Heat start their stretch run and the road trip with a win. So now that we're officially back from the post-All-Star break, I wanted to take a little bit of time and just talk about what I'm hoping slash expecting to see from the Heat as we enter the stretch run. One of the things the first things I noticed when I was really paying attention to the Heat was how Eric Spoelstra, as the head coach, would typically take like December, January, even early parts of February to tinker, you know, try new things out, experiment, see what they have. So, like, for example, starting Nikola Jovic seems along those lines. But once we get closer to, like, March, as we are about now, is when he'll start to, you know, tamper things down. Hey, let's just get to our more playoff rotation players and get ready for the push. So, like, to address the example I brought up with Nikola Jovic starting, I do think that continues, but I think once Rozier comes back, for sure, Jovic either goes to the bench or might even be out of the rotation, barring maybe, like, a favorable matchup. Like, I still think, for example, that Pelicans matchup was extra favorable for Jovic just because of the big front court that the Pelicans have with Valanciunas and Zion Williamson. So then, hey, you put Jovic, at least he's a big enough body to put in front of Valanciunas, and then you let Bam get onto Zion. So I think Jovic becomes a more specific matchup-dependent starter, if even starting at all, just to finish up that example. So along those lines, here's just some things that I'm looking for slash kind of expecting over the next few weeks as we get close to the playoffs. First, I would expect Jimmy Butler just to pretty much do what he did coming out of that Pelicans game. Be more aggressive, be more engaged, especially see the impact in the steals column, and to continue to shoot threes, because I think that is a good compromise for him to be able to have an impact. You know, you're impacting the score column, you're increasing the spacing, you still get to, you know, talk your shit when you knock a three in somebody's face and you're like, oh, you sagged off of me. So, you know, Jimmy gets to do all that stuff he does without really expending too much energy, because he still needs to conserve some of that for the playoffs itself. And the interesting part here, though, is Jimmy Butler's three-point shooting in particular this year. So I went and quick glance through it real quick. Jimmy's first 3 years in Miami, he was shooting below 30% from three on about two attempts a game. And then last season, it jumped up to the mid-30s, but it was on like 1.6 attempts per game. This year, it's back up about 2.2, but he's shooting in the mid-40s. So it's becoming something he can go to this year. And one of my criticisms of this entire core has always been how Jimmy and Bam don't space the floor, so you need the other three players to do that for them. So anything that they can contribute towards the spacing themselves is just going to be like an immediate force multiplier. So with that, expect Jimmy to shoot more threes, expect him to maintain that level of aggression. But with the shooting the threes part and the space that could allow him to work with, it could make him even more effective and manage his energy more for the playoffs itself. Next up, and in an almost opposite direction, Bam Adebayo, pretty much stay where you're doing, like on the defensive end, because I don't really think you can get that much higher on the defensive end without expending extra energy that would, you know, cause too much harm on the offensive end. So Bam, stay consistent there. Really, the offensive end is just more so, I mean, he's a 20-10 guy with defensive player of the year defense. He's doing great on both ends. But on the offensive end, I would say try to eat out some of those longer mid-ranges and get more towards the rim. I do think, because I think in a manner similar to Jimmy, Bam's trying to conserve some energy throughout the regular season so that way he can keep those rim attacks going more so in the playoffs. And that's why he's been going more towards, the only difference though being is Bam has been moving more towards longer mid-ranges while Jimmy has been moving more towards threes. And the point difference is the whole reason why we have the three-point revolution. And while I would absolutely love Bam to start at least attempting threes, especially if they can be in the flow of the offense, I just don't think that's something to expect, not even hope, for this season. Again, maybe in years going forward, but a major change like that at this point, I don't think you could make it happen in the flow of the offense at this point in the season. So instead for Bam, it's go the opposite way. Hey, cut out some of those, and again, I kind of like really quickly looked through his shot diet, and his shooting has been drifting more out, which is bad until it hits three, and then it becomes good, because then the value of the three makes the math work out better. But currently, it's drifting towards like the most inefficient kinds of basketball. So trim out some of the mid-range, and if you already have them pulled that far out that they're contesting along mid-range, try to blow by them instead. Spin move or something, essentially, and get to and make those attempts at the rim instead, because those are just going to be more efficient. More foul attempts, more free throw attempts, everything will start to flow a little bit better. And again, close to the playoffs, that energy can start to be expended towards that. And then the last of Miami is, I guess, three. These are their most three most important players. Tyler Hero. I do expect Hero to remain a starter without going. I mean, that could literally be its own thing. Plenty of people have argued both sides of it all. I come down to the side, and I've gone back and forth on it, but I come down to the side that Hero is going to remain the starter. So then it becomes a question of, okay, how do you maximize him as the starter? One potential solution that I could see Spo going with is staggering more of Hero's minutes with Butler. Because if you're going to have Jimmy be super aggressive closer to the playoffs, like MVP Jimmy Butler, then you want him with the ball in his hands more often. And if you still want to have those opportunities with Tyler on the ball in his hand, the easiest solution is, hey, both of you start, but then one of you is the first to the bench, and then one of you comes back. When that person comes back, then the other person goes, and you work from there. Or the other solution to that could be Tyler Hero leaning more into the off-ball part of his game, which I do think he's been doing that already, especially since the acquisition of Rozier. So the thing that I would expect from Hero to improve upon where he's at in the next few weeks would be to remember his playmaking. So that Pelicans game, for example, during the 21-3 run that the Pelicans went on to eventually tie the game going into the half, I want to say four missed field goal attempts by Miami during that run were Tyler Hero trying to force it. And, I mean, Tyler Hero is a phenomenal player. I just have not seen him be able to be such a level of offensive player that he can just command it at will to the point like that he was trying to do. So instead, hey, if you pull two defenders on you, toss it up to Bam. Like, run a pick and roll with Bam, see if you can get him on a good roll. Or run a pick and roll and see if you get somebody open. Like, lean into the playmaking aspect of it. Because I do think he's great at, like, collapsing defense, drawing defenders into him, and opening things up for other players. He just then has to have that willingness to say, hey, I could get a good shot over this guy, or I got the guy that's cutting to the basket wide open and I could pass it to him for a great dunk attempt. So I spent the bulk of the time talking about those three. I do still think they're Miami's three most important players. To go through some of the other names on the list, like Terry Rozier, I do expect him to get healthy. It was extremely fortunate that was not a season-ending injury with how bad it initially looked. They would expect the Heat to take their time on it because they're still doing good enough that they could probably go through the rest of this road trip without him. The word is he's probably coming back at some time during this road trip at least. So we'll see how that goes. But the other thing I hope/expect when he gets back is his shot starts to fall. The playmaking's looked good. The defense has looked solid enough. It's just been the question of the jumper not falling. And despite all that, Miami has still rattled off some good wins. It's just the question of how much better could they be if Rozier also had his jumper dropping. So I don't expect that slump to last too long. His metrics have been too good over the last few years to suggest that all of a sudden he's just going to go off a cliff. So when he gets a shot back, we could really see some fireworks. Next one, Duncan Robinson. Since Tyler Hero looks like he's going to be the starter, and I don't see why Rozier would not be either, considering that he's like the actual point guard and can do a little bit better playmaking than Tyler Hero can at this point, I would expect Duncan to continue to come off the bench. So it's going to be, hey, can he have more nights like those Pelicans? Have like a 5 for 11 or a 4 for 10. Like, still get the volume up. It's on Spo to also make sure Duncan gets the minutes to get to that volume. But just can Duncan continue to keep that rhythm, continue to get that volume, continue to be a great shooter off the bench? Because that's going to be the role that he's going to have over the next few weeks. Then the last ones, Jaime Jaquez, just trying to knock down some threes. He's starting to come back to form after the groin injury. It's really, I think at this point, just knock down some threes, keep the defense all honest, and then open up some stuff inside. And then Caleb Martin continuing to improve on the defensive end. Like, beginning of the season was not looking too great, though Caleb was coming back, I think, from knee tendonitis, which can be a tricky injury to come back from. But especially over the last few weeks, month or so, the defense looked noticeably better and closer to, like, you know, what we saw in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, the high point for the Caleb Martin experience so far. So if you can get back to that, all the better for Miami, especially considering that he's playing more starter minutes where he's being more of the point of attack defender. And now for just the team in general, I do expect the Heat to continue to be a top 10 defense, like they're ranked 8th right now. They've got a legit DPOY candidate in Bam. Jimmy's more engaged. Tyler's, like, legitimately being a good team or positional defender. Martin, Haywood, so they got great wing defenders. This is and obviously Eric Spoelstra, this is a top 10 defense, which is one of the big metrics that the Heat always grade themselves by. And then the other thing is, with Jimmy going on the offensive end, and if Terry Rozier can come back and get a shot dropping, I would expect the Heat to at least creep up into top 20 for offensive rating, and, you know, at least be trending in the right direction come playoff time. And the final hope slash expectation for all of this, and I would put this more in the expectation camp, is for the Heat to dig out of the play-in, at least get the 6th seed, if not compete for the 5th seed, depending upon how things end up. So with that, let's look ahead to the next week for the Miami Heat. First up, the injury report as usual. Terry Rozier, Tyler Hero, both listed questionable for tonight, so I don't believe they're playing with their respective knee injuries. Josh Richardson is not expected to play on this trip due to the shoulder injury. I mean, he was still walking around on the bench, like, with a sling. So, and again, with the addition of Jalon Wright, I would probably imagine that they take their time making sure Richardson comes back with a fully healthy shoulder. Again, really sucks because he was playing well. Butler and Jovic were suspended for one game, which will be tonight versus the Kings, because of the fight last Friday. And then Jimmy Butler posted a Bad Boys meme that's pretty funny to go look at if you get the opportunity. So that wraps up the injury slash suspension report. The plan for the Heat this week, they finish up their road trip, 3 more games on the road, then they come back for a quick 2-game homestand. And jumping right into it, first we are going with the game against the Kings tonight. So I got to make sure I get this out in time. This is a Kings team that currently has a 33-23 overall record, 5th in the West. And the Heat are up 1-0 in the best of 2 series. First win came when they broke their losing streak, the 7-game losing streak, and it was what? They had like a 38-39 assist game. Something ridiculous like that. Really great game. Looking at the injury report for the Kings, they do have 2 players injured, but I don't recognize either of their names, so I don't believe that they are anything of significance for the Kings. Feel free, any Kings fans, to point me wrong there. But next up, players to watch out for the Kings has to be De'Aaron Fox, the point guard. The Heat did a good job containing him last time, so I would hope that continues this time on. And then the Sabonis versus Bam matchup is usually pretty fun, just both playmaking, really versatile centers, well, except Sabonis isn't so much on the defensive end. But still, it'll be a good matchup, especially as they battle on the glass. For stats for the Kings, they are 13th in offensive rating, 19th defensive rating, 10th in pace. Things that they do well, 4th in 3-point attempt rates while being 12th in 3-point percentage. So they're going to come in, bomb from range a lot. This is the part where they get some of their DNA from the Warriors in that regard. While they are 27th in 2-point attempts, they're 4th in 2-point percentage. So not a lot of shots inside the arc, but really high quality looks, especially a lot of stuff cutting to the basket. It's about the only way you get that high in percentage. And then they limit opponent offensive rebounds, being first in that, which combined with, think of like of an okay defensive rebounding percentage. Essentially what it kind of boils down to is, like, if the opponent doesn't make the shot, they're getting the defensive rebound. Ergo, the opponent has, you know, so little offensive rebounds to get. For things that the Kings do badly then. 13th in opponent field goal attempts, but 23rd in opponent field goal percentage, so they're not winning either the volume or the efficiency battle from the defensive end. They're last in opponent three-point percentage. Miami is a great three-point shooting team. I think they're still around top 5. So could be an area for Miami to really take advantage of if they can get going from 3 and punish them. They're 22nd in opponent assists. Miami likes to get out and generate a lot of assists, so they don't have to worry so much about that. And then 22nd in personal fouls while being 21st in opponent free throw attempt. So Miami can also try to exploit and get to the line and get some extra points that way additionally. And then storyline for this game. The Kings did play and they won Sunday night. So they will be on the second night of a back-to-back, whereas the Heat, while on the road, will have had two nights off. So can the Heat take advantage of a team where they have a pretty significant rest advantage over, even if it is going, you know, from that they're coming in on the road? And then how do the Heat respond without two more starters in Jovic and Butler? I would imagine probably something like DeLon Wright, Duncan Robinson, Bam Adebayo, Caleb Martin, Jaime Jaquez. I'll go with that. I'll go with that for the starting lineup. So after that game tonight, the Heat will play a back-to-back on the road tomorrow night at the Portland Trailblazers. This is a Trailblazers team that has a 15-41 overall record, 14th in the West, first of two meetings against the Trailblazers. Looking at the injury report, there's a pretty long list of, like, out for this game, out for that game for the Trailblazers. It smells a lot like a team that's, I mean, it's no secret. This is the lost season for them. They're in the first year of a rebuild post-trading Dame. We were all well aware of that scenario. So this seems like a team that's like, hey, this guy's a little banged up, and just say he's out for this game. Not like playing for much anyway. If anything, they would want to lose to get higher draft odds. Players to watch out for on the Trailblazers still, though. Anthony Simons, who looks like a legit 20-plus point-per-game scorer, and still relatively young, so, you know, competitive, wants to prove himself. That's still a guy that's going to give his effort regardless of what the team around him might be wanting to do tanking-wise. Maybe Jeremy Grant. He's had a pretty solid two-way season. Been shooting really well from three, so at least want to give him that much respect. But looking at the stats for the Trailblazers, this gets really bleak really quick. 29th in offensive rating, 23rd in defensive rating, 24th in pace. For things that they do well, to my surprise, they are first in opponent three-point percentage. So that could really play against Miami if they start falling in love with their threes and they're not dropping. 6 in opponent three-point attempts and 6 in opponent field goal attempts. So, yeah, they do a good job of limiting threes, and then the threes that they do give up don't even go in very often. And in general, they do a good job limiting opponent field goal attempts, which goes to why they're, you know, 23rd in defensive rating versus, like, 29th in offensive rating. Then you get to the bad part. 30th in field goal percentage, 30th in assists while being 28th in turnovers, and 28th in opponent steals. So this is a team that Miami should be able to lock up, if not even outright just strip the ball away from them. And then 24th in personal fouls while being 23rd in opponent free throw attempts. So yeah, defense should be able to clamp down on them, and then offensively they can lean into just generating fouls off of them to get some easy trips to the line. Storyline for this game is, can the Heat take care of business against a bad team on the second night of a back-to-back and third game on the road? Like, the outside conditions are not good going into this game, but, like, the actual matchup is heavily favored towards the Heat. You know, against the situation of, can they take advantage of it? And then, of course, the fan bases for the Heat and the Blazers will be heavily invested in this game. Because if the Blazers win, then, you know, they'll do all the memes about how, oh, the Heat, they really need a Dame, it's so great we didn't give it to them. And if the Heat win, it's going to be about, oh, the Dame package beat the Trailblazers, wouldn't it be nice to have this? I'll throw out my likes. I don't like to partake in that kind of engagement too often myself, but yeah, I hope the Heat win because the jokes will be good. After the Trailblazers on Tuesday, the Heat will finish up their road trip at the Denver Nuggets this Thursday. At least it's not on the second night of a back-to-back, so at least they get like a day to try to adjust to Denver's altitude. But this is a Nuggets team that's 39-19, currently third in the West. This will be the first of two meetings against the Nuggets, so still got one more where they're going to host them later on in the year. Looking at the injury report, only saw two players injured, but like with the Kings, I didn't recognize their names, so I don't believe they're major as far as I know. So players to watch out for the Nuggets, probably don't need to tell you this, Nikola Jokic, arguably the best player in the league, and literally one of the handful of players that gives Bam a problem defending. So that's going to be a whole thing just to try to at least slow him down, if that's even possible. But the problem is, outside of Jokic, there's several players you do have to watch out for. Jamal Murray hit the point guard partner for Jokic. Michael Porter Jr., just really tall sniper. Aaron Gordon, really great defensive and athletic dunker. They put a good team around him. To no surprise, they're great. When you look at the stats for the Nuggets, they're 11th in offensive rating, 11th in defensive rating, 28th in pace. So they're pretty much just hovering around outside of top 10 in both. For things that they're good at, though they're 19th in field goal attempts, they're 6th in field goal percentage, so more of a low volume but high efficiency team. Again, a lot of these things kind of make sense within the context of Jokic. 9th in offensive rebounds, dude's big, and between him and Aaron Gordon, they can get offensive rebounds. 4th in assists, Jokic is a phenomenal passer from the center position. So imagine you get playmaking from other areas. Makes sense they're great at assists. 6th in turnovers, so they don't turn the ball over very much. Credit Jokic. 9th in opponent field goal attempts, while 8th in opponent field goal percentage. So they do a really, really great job at just limiting the opponent team just in general, just smothering them. And 2nd in opponent three-point attempts. So they do a good job of limiting opponent shots from three. Really, they just kind of just bludgeon you to death. Nothing too fancy. No, like, oh, really hot three-point shooting all the time. Like, no, they just give the ball to Jokic and he just bludgeons you to death. For things that they're bad at, 29th in three-point attempt rate. Although, considering how good they are at offense and their 29th in three-point attempt rate, it to me gives the idea of a team that isn't really trying too hard to space out the floor. Not that they have to with Jokic bludgeoning inside. They are 27th in free throw attempts and 23rd in opponent personal fouls, so they may not get to the line very often. And then 20th in opponent free throw attempts, so Miami might be able to get to the line a little bit against them as well. There wasn't much to find in the bad category. And then storyline for this game. So, kind of like with the Kings, the Nuggets will be on the second night of a back-to-back. So can the Heat take advantage of that to finish off their road trip strong? And then additionally, how will these teams look after, you know, the last time they met each other, which was in the NBA Finals last year? Like, does Miami still just get bludgeoned to death? And then we talk about, oh, this was the end of a long road trip, and that part's not fair. Or does Miami come out, get the win, and then we say, hey, we figured something out, so if we see the Nuggets in the Finals again, we could finish the job. Hopefully it'll be the latter. And then to finish up Miami's week, they will come back home and host the Utah Jazz this Saturday. This is a Jazz team that currently has a 27-31 overall record, 11th in the West. Miami is down 0-1 in the first two meetings. The last time was the end of December. I think that was when Jimmy hurt his ankle and missed a few weeks. I can't remember that for certain. Something along those lines. But looking at the injury report for the Jazz, Otto Porter Jr. might be out, so I don't know how much of an impact that is there. Players to watch out for on the Jazz, Lauri Markkanen, just really tall, great, versatile player, really great shooter. I give him a good amount of credit for reviving his career after a shaky first few years with Chicago and Cleveland. And then also Jordan Clarkson, just because he's a high-volume shooter, and if those shots start to fall, then all of a sudden it could be hard to keep up with the Jazz. So, looking at the stats for the Jazz now, 15th in offensive rating, 26th in defensive rating, 9th in pace, though. And things that they do well. A lot of it has to do with a fair amount of size and length to impact the boards. 3rd in rebounds, 6th in opponent rebounds, so they do a good job controlling the glass. 6th in blocks, that goes to the length that they have and the athleticism they play with. 11th in free throw attempts, 9th in opponent personal fouls, so expect them to try to foul, get to the line, that's where they generate a good amount of their offense, and then 8th in field goal attempts, so the rest of it, their offensive efficiency comes from the volume that they're playing at. Things that they do badly, though, despite being 8th in field goal attempts, they're 19th in field goal percentage, so that is where if the Heat could really key in on and turn a lot of that volume into misses, so then the Heat can get out on the break. 30th in turnovers while being 29th in opponent steals. So, I mean, Miami loves to win the turnover battle. They love to get out and steal, especially Jimmy Butler. By all means, this could be a team that they can get out and do that against. 25th in opponent three-point attempts and 29th in opponent three-point percentage. So Miami can lean into another strength, three-point shooting, to try to see if that can help take down the Jazz. And then storyline for this game. The Jazz are still fighting to make the play-in, while the Heat are fighting to get out of it in the opposite direction. So who's going to get the leg up here? I think at this point that the Jazz would probably be fine just kind of phoning this in and calling it a season. So, again, like I've mentioned, I think with pretty much every game in the look ahead, can Miami take advantage? Like, on paper, this is a bit of a rough week. You know, you got Kings fifth in the West, Nuggets third in the West, Blazers on second night of a back-to-back, all on the road. But if you peel back the surface, oh, Kings second out of back-to-back. Oh, that's right, the Blazers suck because they're rebuilding. The Jazz might be ready to go, and they might be ready to just call it a year and tank a little bit. Nuggets still on the second out of a back-to-back. Like, there's plenty of opportunities and advantage for Miami this week. I would think they would go at least 2-2. So, after the game against the Jazz, the Heat continue with one more game at home the following Tuesday against the Detroit Pistons. But at that point, we'll cover that on the next episode. Also next week, we will be at the 60-game mark, so we can talk about how the Heat look, all those fun stats and storylines that happen around the quarter marks of the season. We'll go through all that next week. But for now, I do thank you for hanging around. That'll be all for this episode. Please, if you can, follow the pod at Heaters Heating and myself at KBR Heat Culture. Also, check out the other great pods we have at OTG Basketball, Full Access Pacers, Brooklyn Buzz, Celtics Pod, all of them. They, again, continue to all do great work. Links for everything are in the show notes as usual. So I'll be back next week. Until then, hope you all have a good one, Heat Nation.